各位南洋放送局的听众朋友，大家好，我是群岛资料库这个计划的发起人。今天我们邀请到一位接受访谈的特别来宾，是很年轻的策展人朱峰仪。他曾经在水谷艺术空间策划过几档很有趣的展览，特别是我印象中比较深刻的是2019年的《重返神性》这个展览。那邀请到很多位关注信仰啊、宗教等议题的艺术家，那所以接下来我们请他先自我介绍，然后再来谈谈我们今天要聊的主题。
Hello， 大家好，我是朱峰仪。那今天谢谢Ricky 的邀请。我自己算是比较学术背景出身的，做策展资历是比较没那么深啦。因为我自己之前是在英国牛津大学念东方研究所，那所写的博士论文是比较会跟国家认同啊、国族主义这些意识形态比较有关的。那之后呢，因为一些因缘机会呢，然后我自己开始对一些宗教跟神秘学会比较有兴趣一点。那也就开始做相关的策展。目前的一些策展之力，像是2019年的这个重返神性，就在讲宗教跟灵性啊、神秘学跟当代艺术之间的这个一个比较紧密的关系。2020年，然后我也被邀请也是在水谷艺术策了一档导致理性动物园，这个是台湾美术双年展的一个平行展。之后呢，有在高雄市立的图书馆呢，也是办了一场跨维度传导的这个展览，那这个就是在台北水谷艺术的这个重返神性的延伸，那大概都是相同的策展的主题跟领域。
好，今天会有这个访谈，一部分是因为在2020年全球受到 COVID-19 疫情的影响，包括旅游、交通以及艺术家之间的交流也陷入了一种停摆的状态。本来可能就是很多艺术家他已经申请了一些国际艺术的驻村，后来没有办法出国。那回到今天的题目的话，因为我们在2019年到2020年的时候，水谷艺术空间举办了一些跟南亚有关的交流。我们知道说，像峰仪他在2019年的时候就有跟另外两位艺术家去参加在尼泊尔的这个艺术进驻以及交流的计划，并且发表了一些他们的报告以及成果。那是不是可以请峰仪再介绍一下他们那一次去尼泊尔的空间以及他们这个交流的一些项目？
好，水谷艺术其实在南亚，尤其是尼泊尔，其实生根已经非常多年了。我那次去的时候大概是2019年，那一年其实已经是第三年的计划了，所以他2017年跟2018年其实都有提这样的计划。这次因为第四年的计划本来是要跟加德满都的三年展做一些合作，但很可惜因为疫情的关系，所以就没有办法继续去执行。对，那我们那一年的计划主题就叫做边陲人台湾与尼泊尔相优系列计划的第三集。那一次的计划我们就是总共有两位艺术家跟我一位策展人。一位艺术家是汪正祥，他是比较做跟摄影相关的。那另外一位是比较做新媒体艺术的姚瑞兰。那我们三个人呢，就是在加德满都的 Nexus 的这个文化空间，大概有一个月的左右的一个驻村调查研究跟创作。那这个空间其实是当地一位蛮资深的新闻艺术家 Ashimina 所创办的。因为他其实蛮资深的，所以他的一些社会网络其实都蛮好的，所以在那个地方其实我们也是受到他非常多的帮助。因为我自己想要过去做的主题同样也是跟宗教跟灵性神秘主义有关，包括是占卜师啊，或者是我们待会会提到的 Kumari 萨满等等，所以受他的帮助非常大。
今天我们会播出一个峰仪在加德满都附近访谈曾经担任过他刚刚提到的 Kumari 就是火女神这个信仰的个案。这个录音档大概有十几分钟，我们会分两段来播出。这里面可能会谈到一些背景，然后以及他怎么样成为 Kumari。
再补充一下，好，那个时候我过去主要就是想要做就是宗教跟神秘主义比较有关的主题的这些调查研究。那在行前就已经知道说尼泊尔有一个这个蛮有名的火女神的一个信仰。那它基本上是有一些比较特别的家族，他们会选月经尚未来临的女孩子当成 他们的活女神来做崇拜，所以这些活女神的年纪大概都是可能2岁到13甚至15岁之间。这次就是也很荣幸，就是说我们过去就是阿须米亚跟其他艺术家也帮我们找到了一位前任的库玛瑞女神，那她现在应该已经在念大学了。那因为她是前任，所以她比较能够对她过去的这些经验，然后做一些反省跟讨论。
我们现在就来先听听看这个录音。
Yeah, so my the first question is,
your family name, because the whole Kumari should be in this family, right?
Not in this family, but there are like 150 family from where the goddess can come from, and you know that there's different Kumari in Kathmandu and in Patan, right?
Yes.
So for Kathmandu, the caste should be Shakya. Whereas in Patan, we need Vajracharya.
Oh, okay. So you are from
Vajracharya.
Okay. So.
But not all Vajracharya can be goddess. It's okay. Like it's only the families from one particular community. So there are only like 150 families. Of
150.
Yeah.
Families. So how do they choose to be this kind of family?
From the very past, like it's only 150 families from where it's a big community. It's
okay.
A big community.
Ah, okay. So, since when you have been Kumari?
From 2010.
10 years. So which age?
I was selected at the age of 5.
Uh-huh.
And I retired at 15.
Okay. So what's the procedure of selecting the Kumari? Do you remember?
I was very young at that time, but according to my parents and other I think it's all based on rituals, like from when the current Kumari has her first period, she's no more Kumari, so
yes.
Her parents will inform the community,
yeah.
And then they will form a selection team.
Mm-hmm.
The team will include the astrologers and the royal priest, the royal priest's wife.
Royal family.
Yeah.
Okay.
And his wife.
Uh-huh.
And 2 or 3 priests from the Taliju temple. So Kumari is believed to be the incarnation of Goddess Taliju. So we have the temple of Goddess Taliju in Patan. So the priest from those temples will be there, and some elder members of our community who has practiced rituals a lot.
Okay.
And so there will be like 10 or 11 members and 2 members from the municipality. The municipality. That's Guti. It's a religious
like last time
authority.
Guti community.
Okay.
The religious authority from the state which looks after the.
So it's kind of national religious community.
Yeah.
Okay.
So there are members from all those. Organizations, and then they will call for all the eligible girls. They're around the age of 2 to 5 or 6. They will be called, and then those who are interested, their parents can bring them on the selection day.
Okay.
So all of them will. Have you been to the Kumari Palace?
Yes.
So there is an open courtyard. You see there, so everyone will gather there.
Okay.
And the children will be sitting on a mat.
Okay.
Then the priest will perform some religious. Rituals.
Okay.
And then after that, what happens is with the power of the goddess, those who are like chosen by the goddess will behave differently. You know, like they will be more calm, they will be more polite, and they can sit. Can you imagine a 2-year-old girl sitting normally? No, right? So they will just be her temperature will be high, like hot, and then she will be red and all. Whereas others who are not chosen by the goddess will stand, cry, and walk out directly you know, they will voluntarily show that they are disqualified.
So it means that as long as a family has 2 or 5 years children, the
they
girls
can come.
They can apply for this kind of position, and probably they will be have 5 or 6 girls. Or
in my time, there were 17 girls invited.
Wow. Okay.
But then they didn't show up on the selection day, so there were only 7.
So what happened when these beautiful girls also become calm and quiet, polite? I mean, what if there were 2 or 3 girls?
No, they're on the first stage, the three girls are selected, on the top 3 are selected on the first round. This is for the first round.
Oh, okay.
There is more stages.
Okay. So you are saying is the last?
For the first round.
For the first.
Yeah.
And that,
on the basis of that, there will be 3 girls selected. So 3 girls will be selected on the first round.
Okay.
After this,
uh-huh.
And then for the final round, they will be taken to the house of the royal priest. Where the wife of priest will take those children into a room, and then she will take off our clothes to see if we have any scar, any cut, any birthmarks that will disqualify us. So whereas the royal priest will stay in the other room, and they will he will be checking our horoscopes. So we should be like having a strong horoscopes, like powerful birth stars and position of all those planets at the time of our birth. So everything they will be checking, and then what happens is the one who is selected by the wife of the priest and the one who have the strongest horoscope will match. It will be the same girl.
So they kind of compare the all the features.
All the physical attributes plus the horoscope and the other characteristics, like
and then choose the final one.
And on the first day, they will have a powerful ritual to transform that girl into a goddess. So she will wear the dress for the first time, and it's kind of initiation ceremony.
So have you witnessed this procedure before? I mean,
No, never.
You just heard from...
Even our parents will not know what will happen, so...
How would you describe being a Kumari at that time?
I was selected at the very young age, but for me, it was only later when I realized that I was a very special person for the society. So, but my parents used to say that I was very special from the birth as well. You know, like I used to go to my mom and ask her to do makeup for me. From the, when I look at the photo of the Kumari or the Kumari, I'll ask her to do the makeup for me.
You mean before you?
Yeah, before I was selected. And then I loved red color from the very young age. And everyone said that I would become a goddess one day. I had that qualities in me.
Wow.
So I was kind of very special. And then when I was actually selected, since I was very young, I had no feelings at that time. But later, I felt more responsible because, and proud as well, because I could preserve my culture. So.
To you, it's kind of a fulfill of a destiny.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's kind of proud and pride and and honor being a Kumari. Okay. But do you think... Is there any kind of a negative impact to your family or to you as being a Kumari?
In my time, it was like the rules for the Kumari was really very strict. Like first one is that she's not allowed to go outside of her house except for the festivals. So at the time, you know, Kumaris were never educated before, you know, like in before people used to say that Kumari herself is a goddess, so no one needs to teach her. So because of that, what happens is like she doesn't get any education, and when she her Kumari is over, like at the age of 12 or 15, then she has to go back to the society. She, you know, like she will not be able to socialize with people, and she has a lot of problem in communicating with people. So that is kind of it will have some psychological impact on her as well.
But do you think you have this kind of impact?
But later, it was my mom who realized that, you know, I can't let, okay, this is culture, but I should also let my daughter educate. So she went in search for schools, which would send teachers to me, come to my home and then teach me.
When you are a
Kumari. Yeah, when I was selected as a goddess. So she requested a school and she was ready to pay for it.
Okay.
So she paid tuition. I had tuitions at my home and I could give exams. At home itself, so that's how I came to educate. And also nowadays it's more better because the schools have also realized that Kumaris can be educated, so they bring other group of students inside the palace so they can sit together with the group and they can play and they can share their experiences.
Okay.
So that's really nice nowadays, but at that time it was not there.
Okay.
So for past in the past it was really hard to be a goddess, but now I don't think that it's that much difficult, so at least she can come and socialize at the same time, you know.
Okay.
So I think these kind of changes should be brought inside, like not only education, she should be like having some extra, you know, like talent, like presentation skills and communication skills. Everything should be taught to her inside the palace so that she's ready to face the world outside on that day. And also like some counseling to the Kumari, like how her life will change afterwards when she's no more a goddess.
Yes, yes, yes. But I suppose that government should financially support the tuition.
Yeah, there is financial support as well.
Okay, okay. Do you know how much is it?
I don't know. It wasn't much in my time.
Okay.
It was very minimal. So it wasn't even enough to cover all the expenses at that time. So my mom used to use all the donations that people give to fund for my education and all. But now I think the amount has raised pretty much well. So the government is fully supporting her education. And even the schools are providing sponsorship to the goddess as a part of their belief or, you know, like faith.
And community as well supports the Okay.
刚才我们听到的是一位前任的童女神，她是策展人朱凤仪在2019年水谷艺术与尼泊尔的 Nessus 交流金主计划里面由当地的策展人协助访谈到的一位个案。因为这位女神她其实已经在念大学了，那她也提到说作为女神是来自于特定的家族以及阶级背景，她的名字叫做Chanira Barachaya， 那这个姓氏是不是有什么样的暗示？
因为在这个尼泊尔的传统里面，Kumari 的女神或是这些童女神必须要在比较特定的家族当中去选择，所以这个Barachaya 她也就是在 Patan 这个地方是一个比较特别的家族。那在那个种姓的这个制度当中，它是属于婆罗门子。其他的像是在加德满都，可能就是会有其他的家族来做担任，像是Shakya 家族去担任。
所以只有这两个家族才能够成为火女神。
在访谈当中，他有提到说，好像有总共有150个家族，就是整个尼泊尔地区有150个家族。那就是必须要再讲一个尼泊尔的比较传统跟比较古老、比较具有历史性的体制吧。比如说，在谈到尼泊尔的首都的时候，我们就会想到加德满都嘛，对不对？
对
对。但是其实现在所认知的加德满都，在当时其实是三个王国的这个范围啦。这三个王国分别是加德满都、帕坦跟巴达布尔，那这三个地区其实都是在那个加德满都河谷，所以换句话说，在卡德曼族他有他自己的这个体制，在帕坦他有他自己的，然后在巴克图他有他自己的，所以这次访问到的就是帕坦的这个火女神，所以在帕坦这个地区就大概就是由这个巴查亚这个家族来做主要的担任。
一个问题是，他同一个时间会有一位吗？像我们刚访谈到的巴拉恰亚家族的火女神，她担任女神的期间是2000年到2010年，她现在是2020，就是差不多19、20几，
对，
差不多这个年纪。
就是说，
那所以这个时间她只会就是在她担任女神期间只会有一位火女神，
对，这个地区就只有一位火女神。
但是整个尼泊尔呢？
这个尼泊尔就是有很多的火女神这样子，就是说在、
oh.
对，就比如说在同一个时间里面， 可能就有150个活女神在尼泊尔，就是加德满都有加德满都的活女神，加德满都的那个 Kumari 的那个 Palace 跟 Patan 的这个 Kumari 的这个宫殿其实是不一样的，对，所以他们有他们自己的体系，其他的一些小的。也不能说小啦，但是就是可能比较中型的这个村落，他们也会有他们自己的 Kumari。
哦，
对对对，
我刚以为是一个国王对一个 Kumari， 现在理解好像不是，是他同时有很多个 Kumari， 但是只有对一个国王。
对，但这个也跟他们比较复杂的政治体系跟历史有关系。比如说像原本在加德满都地区，他可能就是一个很大的王朝，可是当这个国王死掉之后，因为他有三个小孩嘛，所以这三个小孩就分裂成三个王国。 对，加德满都王国跟帕灿跟那个巴达坡的这三个、
嗯、
对，所以那个皇族的身份跟体系是可以很复杂的，它不是一个单一的中央集权的概念这样子。
然后可是为什么我们会提到这些，就是因为王室在这里面扮演一个很重要的角色。那这个部分可能要回到库玛丽的这个神话里面，他跟国王的一个神话的故事这样。那是不是可以请凤仪介绍一下？
嗯，好啊。但是这个故事呢，就像我们民间传说一样，它其实也有很多的版本。我就讲一个，就是我比较熟悉的版本。但是其实它的那个结构其实都是大同小异的。这个传说呢，是说大概是在尼泊尔12世纪到17世纪的时候，马拉王朝有一个末代的国王，国王这宫殿里面呢，有一个女神叫做Tadru 的。显现在这个国王面前，对，然后可以让国王做一些请意，就是国王可以问他一些事情这样子，或者是他们平常就是比较好，也是可以玩一些骰子游戏。这个国王跟这个塔拉朱女神呢，中间一直都隔了一层纱，所以国王他从来没有见过这个女神的真面目。然后女神也有特别告诫过国王说，国王不能够看到他，也不能够碰触到他。如果有任何不敬，那他就会永远之后就不再现身了。可是有一次呢，就是国王跟这个女神在玩骰子游戏的时候呢，就气氛特别热烈，再加上国王又喝了一点酒，在那个当下呢，他就去抓这个女神的手，这是其中一个版本啊。那另外一个版本是说，国王因为在这样子一个氛围当中呢，有点情不自禁，所以就尝试要掀开这个面纱，然后想要去看这个女神的真面目。那这个时候呢，女神就非常生气，然后就跟国王说：“好，你今天既然这样做，那我之后就不会再过来了。”所以之后国王就非常非常的自责啊，然后就是苦苦的哀求挽留啊。那最后呢，就是女神她也是心软的，所以她就是下一个神谕，就是说那她之后她会附身到努瓦地区 Bhattacharya 或是 Shakya 这一组童女身上。这个就是整个这个童女神的传说，所以之后就会有这个童女神的传统跟文化出来这样。
你刚刚提到那个Tadru 女神，她其实就是保护这个王室的女神嘛。
对，他可以说是保护整个的王国，因为在那个时候王国跟王室其实就是一
在一起，
对
对，所以他其实算是一个王室的保护的女神，投身在现代的社会里面。当然我们知道说现在是21世纪，像这一类关于传承或者是西方看起来是有点迷信的当代的习俗，那如何延续也成为一个很有趣的议题。当他们卸任女神的时候，他们也遇到一些社会适应的问题，所以你访谈的这位Chanila Bhattacharya， 他后来投身了一些关于女神权益的倡议活动。
其实那个时候在去加德满都之前，也是在查关于活女神的一些报道啊，或者是研究调查，也是可以看到有些报道对于这样的一个传统其实是抱持比较负面的态度，因为这样子一个文化传统会让这些小女孩就是失去教育的机会，然后再加上因为她整个的状况其实是非常限制性的，所以她必须要被保护得很好，所以她的这个整个的社交或是交朋友也会被相当的就是限制住。这次 访问到这位前任的 Kumari， 然后就也就特别去问他说有关这方面的一些状况。那他自己是说，这些问题其实他们自己也有意识到，所以现在都有一些很不错的改善。那这个东西当然他都有意识到，然后也是一个问题，所以这位 Charina 他其实现在就是做一些倡议的活动。比如说他在访谈的时候就有提到说，他跟他这些 X 就是前任的 Kumari 女生有组一个团体，然后可以让现任的这些同女生的家庭可以做一些咨询，对，就是一些经验的传承。今天呢，那他也会去做一些相关的倡议跟活动。他自己的观点跟态度，他是蛮支持去 preserve 比较传统的一些文化，因为第一个他就是代表的尼泊尔的文化嘛。但是呢，他也知道说，在这个比较传统文化当中，他里面会需要做一些调整。嗯，对。
那我们底下就来听另外一个，就是你跟他的访谈里面有提到一位。就是她也是担任火女神，她也是 Brahmacharya 这个形式的出生的火女神。可是她因为32年没有月经的样子，所以她在任女神的时间非常的长。后来王室好像要求要指派另外一位火女神，这个是不是针对当事人访谈，而是透过这位你的访谈对象去介绍的一个案例？所以我们就是简单听一下。
So, is she your relative or?
She's my aunt, my father's sister.
Okay. Do you know which period, from which year to which year she's been a Kumari?
I don't know the exact English date. I don't know the English date, but I will give you the date later.
Okay.
It's 72 years. She was selected at the age of 2.
Okay.
She remained the official Kumari until 32. For 30 years, she was the official Kumari.
Okay.
And then at the age of 32, she was, because she was like, it was difficult for her to carry and, attend the festivals outside.
Mm-hmm.
And Kumaris are supposed to be little girls, not the older women. So the prince actually...the then prince actually pointed out this thing to the royal family.
Mm-hmm.
So the royal family demanded her to be replaced by another Kumari.
Okay.
So that's why there is another official Kumari, and she's also following the same lifestyle since then.
Okay,
because
okay.
She never had her menstruation.
Okay. Oh, okay. She didn't have the menstruation at all.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's probably because...this reason why she can be Kumari for such a long time.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. So I'm guessing maybe she has some kind of special power. Maybe she's kind of a very good at connecting with
energy.
Okay.
But she has devoted her whole life in this Kumari.
But you say she's retired from official Kumari at the age of 32. But still, I mean, at that day age, she can still...
She could have left her house, and she could have lived a normal life at that time point. But she chose to continue this. And even there are many people who believe that she didn't have her menstruation. So, she is still the Kumari.
Okay. But why, I mean, she can still participate in the festival. I mean, at the age of 32, it's quite young. It was quite young, actually. So why the community has to...
It wasn't the community, it was actually the royal family.
Okay. So do you know the reason why they do this kind of decision?
Actually, the royal family has to take blessings from the Kumari once a year in Patan, and it was on the festival when the king and the prince came to the festival to receive blessing from the goddess. But the prince pointed out that she's so old because the Kumari from Kathmandu, she's so young, but she's so old. Why she's a Kumari till now? So that question actually triggered the king.
Okay.
So he. formed a what inspection team to find out what's actually happening. So they came here and did all the and they came to know that she didn't have her period, so she even had to go through a medical the doctor came here to check that if she was hiding her periods and all. So but there was, they didn't find a point on why to dismiss her, so but they were not satisfied, so they ordered that we need another Kumari because she has crossed her A's, and that the A's was only the reason for for her press.
Well, to me, it's kind of unfair. But still, there are a lot of people come to this house to worship. Do you think how many averages?
On average, I don't know. In festival times, there are 100 of people coming in during Dasa and all. But on Saturdays and Tuesdays, it's like when tourists come, they come in a group. So I cannot say how many. It's like when the tourists come, they're in the group of 15 to 20. But the local people, they are 5 to 10 every day in normal days. And especially when they have their birthdays or there are lots of pujas and offerings on their birthdays. So it depends.
But I didn't see a sign downstairs. So.
She's mainly worshipped by the locals, and the locals know, so
She's now not receiving the financial support from Carmen, I guess not.
In the eyes of Carmen, she's an ex-goddess, because she was, dismissed. At the age of 32, she was not an official Kumari, so she's receiving a pension as an ex-goddess.
Okay.
那我们刚刚听到了间接的透过我们访谈的前任的后女神去访谈到，那他们也是有一些宗族的一些关系嘛。我觉得比较有趣的是说，因为按照传统的规定的话，只要是她月经还没有来潮，她都可以继续的以处子之身去担任女神的这个职务。可是因为似乎王室对于这个女神的形象没有那么的满意，那我觉得这个部分对我来说是蛮有趣的，因为我们刚刚其实在讨论关于传统的女神的信仰跟当代社会之间有点冲突的问题，那也受到一些西方媒体的批判，那我觉得这个案例就算是蛮有代表性的。那不知道你怎么样去看说她跟王室之间的宗教时间的关系？
好，其实能够知道这件事情也真的是蛮意外的，因为我们也是当天然后要去访问Chanyura 的时候，然后才发现在另外一个房间里面有一个年纪比较大的火女神，就是其实那个时候有点震惊啦。那后来一问才知道说，原来这位年纪比较大的 Kumari 她是她爸爸的姐姐还妹妹，这样子，
姑姑吧。
对，就不知道是姑姑还是阿姨。那 anyway， 就是因为她的状况非常特殊，就是说因为她32年来都没有月经来，所以让她好像可以有这个资格，然后来继续做 Kumari 这件事情。但是呢，她还是被替换了啦，因为 Kumari 她在那个Niwa 里面的这个语言，她原本的意思就是处女。那另外当然也就是说，因为 Kumari 有些节庆他要出去的时候，他不能踩在地上的，
不能碰到地，
对，所以他必须就是大家要去抬着他，对。但是如果说你因为年纪太大，所以他会变得比较重，所以这也会在传统文化的实践上会有些问题跟困扰。
我觉得比较有趣的是说，神明或者是灵媒，他作为集体的民众，特别是中低阶层欲望投射的一个对象。你刚刚提到说这个库玛丽的种姓是婆罗门的这样子的背景，我们知道是印度的种姓嘛，婆罗门最高，然后再来还有其他的阶层。那王室和女神的信仰之间的指派啊，或者是彼此有祈福的一个互相的一个关系，这个关系背后好像又有一些种姓上的一些高低差异。然后再来就是说，女神这件事情本身就是一个值得去讨论的事情，她在信仰里面是一个很强大的可以保护众人的符号。当她作为比较年幼的没有月经来的时候，她其实不能选择自己不要当女神， 可是当如果她月经一直没有来，她也不能选择自己要继续当女神。特别是在这个案例里面，冲突的场景似乎到了一个比较强的状态。这样我们会不会回到这个文化上的符号去讨论？当然我们这里似乎怎么讨论都很难下一个结论吧，就是因为我们两个都不算是真正的研究人类学或者是文化象征的意义。但是我还是希望说可以跟风一句聊聊说，到底我们要怎么样去理解这种女神的这个双重的意涵。
那我先讲一下就是关于种姓制度这个部分好了。但像我刚刚说的，如果说这个比较年纪比较大的 Kumari， 他只是把这个事实给提了出来，所以整个社群开始去做一些调查。但我要说的是说，就是在理解尼泊尔社会不管是政治体系或者是宗教体系之间关系，都一定还是要把种姓制度给放进来看。至少在这个角色里面，他会分婆罗门跟夏地利。夏地利他是就是比较是王室政治阶级的这一块，那婆罗门当然是主要是祭司啊，然后处理宗教跟形而上学的这一块。在传统上，婆罗门的阶级的确是比夏地利 来得高，所以他严格说起来并不那么完全是一个政教合一的一个体系这样子，他还是会有这样子一个分工的趋势。可是在整个的历史变迁过程中，因为婆罗门他们是掌握形而上的知识，但夏地利他们因为是王室，他们掌握的是比较世俗上的一些发展，所以在整个的地区或是社群，他的经济开始慢慢发展之后，夏地利会相对获得比较多的一些权利，因为他们的那个物质基础是很够的。所以在这个状况之中，那个夏地利的那个阶级其实会有的地区，它其实甚至会高于婆罗门。其实刚刚有提到说关于这个 Kumari 的信仰，强人他其实他就有提到，他认为说 Kumari 这个信仰有几个比较深刻的文化意涵。第一个他是说他是一个女性的神祇，但是是一个在男性为主的一个社会当中，像是月经来的女性呢，她们就会有些月经禁忌，那也就是说月经来女性你可能不能去厨房，然后也不能去庙里等等之类的。另外一个文化意涵就是强瑞他有提到说，因为呢这个是印度的神祇降生在传统上比较属于是佛教的这个婆罗门的阶级里面，所以它其实有印度教跟佛教的折冲的这样的一个意涵所在。其实宗教它就是一个可能可以是一个社会秩序的反应嘛，所以 Kumari 女神她至少不管是在性别上或在宗教上，印度教跟佛教的这个冲突上，其实是占了一个比较一个协调的机制在里面。其实我更有兴趣的是关于女神这件事情，就是说第一个在尼泊尔的这个传统社群里面，它其实对女性的敌意或是不利是比较大的，那个性别不平等的那个阶级是蛮高的，但是同时他们还是有这个活女神的信仰。我自己觉得蛮有趣的，然后也一直在思考说到底为什么会是这样子。在我自己啦，我自己觉得说在思考这件事情的时候，其实可以进一步去理解说阴性力量所代表的一些文化意涵。不管是我刚刚所说的那个塔拉举的女神或者是 Kumari 女神，我们都可以看到就是整个社会对于阴性力量这件事情有包括是她的情欲的部分，以及这个或是阴性力量所代表的生育 的部分，其实都有一个很强大的一个想要去掌握的一个欲念跟驱力这样子。
对它也可能是一种敬畏或者是一种 尊敬，但是反过来说它也是一个对于有一种控制，也就是
对
这样的
对。所以就我自己的访谈的调查跟研究分析的话，我自己可能会去解释说关于 Kumari 或是活女神这样的文化传统，它其实是整个社会对于阴性力量的一个掌握的一个欲望。那这个阴性力量包括就是每个人的情欲，然后甚至是阴性力量所代表的生育力。
当然就像我们刚刚讲的，其实今天很难去做一个结论。那当然不管是它是一个集体潜意识的一个投射，或者它是一个政治上的妥协，就是对于不同家族势力不同种姓之间的好等等，这个案例都非常有趣。 用一个比较西方的讲法，就是它不够现代化，是一个很容易得到的一个结论，可是似乎不是一个最能够圆满的去解释这个传统的现代意涵的方式。那所以我们今天就也不去做一个结论，在下一集里面我们会继续播出关于这个访谈的后半部，特别是关于月经来之前和来之后这个女神身份的转变。那同时我们也会介绍另外一位艺术家，他在尼泊尔所做的正好就是关于月经的
月经禁忌的这一块，
他是用类似部卫生棉去
对
去带工作坊这样。那就希望大家可以继续收听我们的节目。
好，谢谢
谢谢
谢谢
大家。